Okay. Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I want to welcome you all to Far Corners. It's a pleasure having you all here. And I'd like to start out with a prayer I put together that may capture the essence of what we're doing here. So if we could just have a little quiet. God, we miss you. We miss you with breaking hearts. We seem to have lost our way and are so very lonely away from you. We want to come home to you more than our hearts can bear. Thank you for our complete defeat. Thank you for the pain of the downward journey. Thank you for leading us to each other and to the path of seeking you. Please allow each of us this weekend to experience your presence at a new level, and from that to show others how to better know you. May we always be in the present moment with you. And I just thought that would get us going. And I wanted to take a minute to describe this retreat for those of you that, hey, George, that are here for the first time. We don't announce this locally in Tampa. There's no flyers. There's no announcements made at any meeting. It is strictly word of mouth. Somehow the word gets out to people around the country, and they make a decision to come here. So we try to have different energy than if everybody already knows each other, because you know how familiar that is. Yeah, the same guys are back and all this. And it's really designed for those of us that have been around a while, even though some new people come, it's more designed for people who've been here for 5 years or 10 years. Or we got a lot of people in here with 25, 30 years who have decided that something made them pack their bags and go off this weekend because they're seeking to get closer to their higher power. That's the whole deal, is that you were motivated to come and see what you could add to your program, what you might hear from, not just from me, but from the other seekers that are in the room. Because as you start having lunch and dinner and hanging out, and we got lots of free time, you're going to get different ideas from others. And where are you at? And so on down. So we're here with a very serious purpose. That's the one purpose, but we still have a lot of fun. It's kind of like AA. It's a dead serious thing. It's life or death, but we have fun while engaging in life or death activities. And that's a very great skill, is to realize how crucial this is and how much fun it's supposed to be at the same time. So that's kind of what that is. Then I really don't know if they talked about the fact that we are getting too many requests. So we came up with a very arbitrary system for the future. And it's going to be this. People who haven't been here before, who want to come, will have a priority. They would be given first consideration. And the first priority they would have, the first group of people that they would have a priority over, are people who've been here this year and last year. You've been here the last 2 years. The second group would be people who have been here 2 out of the last 3 years. So once you skip 2 years, you're at the top of the list again. Do you follow what I'm saying? So we just couldn't have everybody be able to come here every year, etc. So I'm just giving everybody a heads up, and I know some of you are going, oh man, but it's the only way to get new people here, because experiencing this for the first time is the most important time in my book. So all of you that are here for the first time, we're really thrilled that you're here, and we hope you walk away with the feeling you're really glad you came. And we have a wonderful facility. There's a path to walk with the prayer of St. Francis. We'll have some holograms up. Do we have them? Okay. They were designed, I'll describe it for you until you saw it. It's to get us used to the fact that what we're looking at on a regular basis isn't important. It's what's beyond that that is really important. And that comes from spiritual awakenings, prayer, meditation, your own personal reading and seeking, working with a sponsor. I mean, the beginning of all of that happens in the fifth step. When you've prepared this list, yes, this is you. You're the most familiar with yourself, anyone else. And as you start through and he goes, what was your part? Oh, no, don't you see your part was really this? Oh, somebody else is helping you see beyond your own life and your own defects that you wrote down and the other people's roles and all of them. When you get through, you go, well, I didn't see it that way. That's right, because you're starting at a very self-centered spot. And when you open your eyes, that's what you see. But there's a better way of seeing it. There's a deeper way of seeing it. And all of sobriety consists of seeing things that you didn't see before, about yourself, about the world, about God, and about everything else. So when Chuck Chamberlain says, a new pair of glasses, that is describing spirituality as well as anything. And Chuck is one of my heroes. And this year you'll see that the whole program is designed around some of his basic teachings. And for those of you that never got a chance to meet him, we have a very poor quality DVD of Chuck giving a talk to college students, so it's not an AA talk. We don't record AA talks. But if you come and see it on the monitor, you'll just get a flavor of the engaging personality and his ability to capture things. And those of you that have listened to New Pair of Glasses or read A New Pair of Glasses, I think the books are in the back. This is not an AA event, so we have our last names on. We're not reading the preamble. We're not doing that. But we have men who are in Al-Anon or AA. That's who's here. And this allows us to talk outside the box, to have a whole library full of non-conference-approved literature, which is very helpful in a spiritual program. And normally the door is open. Guy probably covered that. And I don't know if we're going to be able to get it unlocked so that we don't have to walk around to go in the back room. And there's T-shirts, et cetera. And like any other conference, the cushion that we need comes from T-shirts. So we sure appreciate everybody making the spiritual decision that they'd like to have a Far Corners shirt to wear around. Now, Chuck had a very simple statement that he made that is, I just love it. And the statement is that there's actually only one problem. And it includes all the other problems that you have. And this problem is conscious separation from God. The perception that you have that you are a separate entity unto yourself. From that problem comes fear of money, fear of being embarrassed, fear of not living up to it, resentments, anger, everything comes out of that one problem. And therefore, there's only one solution that includes all solutions, and that is conscious contact with God. And that's what we have, you know, sought through prayer and meditation, to improve our conscious contact. As the contact is improved, all our other problems start diminishing. And I know we work on them specifically, and you can make some progress. But if you lose sight of the basic components of this whole deal, you'll spend your time chasing your tail around after financial thing and the sexual problem and this and this and that, and never really get to the ultimate solution to everything, which is seeing how close we can get to our own Creator. And so in our big book, oh, there's the clock. In the big book, we have lots of descriptions of God. And the one I like the best is, God is everything or he's nothing. He either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? And I got two thoughts on that particular thing I just quoted. One of the most important parts of that is, what is your choice going to be? And I'm going to give you my own theory on choice or free will. And this is just mine. If it disagrees with your sponsor and every other book you read, I'm probably wrong. But I still like it, because it helps me make a point. And that is, my observations lead me to think that our free will is limited to one choice. That's the only area that we have free will in. And that choice is contained in that thing we just quoted. We can either choose God and live with the results of that choice, or we cannot choose God and live with the results of that choice. If we choose God, then we want to turn our will over to Him and follow His guidance, thereby not making any more choices. If we don't choose God, we're going to follow our character defects. They're going to jerk us around by our nose, and we really don't have free choice anyway. I mean, we have our values. We have these. I'm going to walk the straight and narrow. I'm just going to be a pure husband. Gee, that secretary is cute. I'm just going to talk to her a little bit. I'm not doing... Pretty soon we're going... Oh my God, I have to lie. How the heck did I get here? How did I get here? Why did I choose that? You didn't choose it. Lust did. You don't have power over that. You can't get rid of it. So you can see how we were jerked around by the instinctual drives that Bill talks about in step 4 and the 12 and 12. So I'm just submitting that if we keep it simple like this, you can see why Chuck's description is so simple and so powerful. So the question comes, if God is everything, if he's the whole universe, how could I be separate from the universe? And when Chuck had a blackboard or he had a piece of paper, he always drew the circle. Those of you that have looked in the book, you've seen, this is everything. If I had a blackboard here, well, I can't, I don't have something to write, but imagine a big circle. There isn't anything aside from this circle. Where do you fit in this picture? And we go up and we draw a little dot outside the circle. And that's where I am. Well, how could I be outside the circle if the circle is everything? How could I exist in addition to the whole universe? That's a piece of cake. I just make up a story that I exist separate from the whole universe and believe it. And there it is. It's hard to believe that we, in the course of growing up, end up with that conclusion. And I don't know what age it occurs. And my kids, this is when I saw it. It was when they were babies, and you could give them a toy to play with, and then you could take that one away and give them another one, and they were looking at that, and I don't remember exactly what age, but you'd go to take the one toy away to give the second toy, and they'd go, "Mine!" All of a sudden, this was mine. And they became aware of themselves, and they weren't, and that's when the trouble started. And they started down what I like to call the prodigal son and the prodigal daughter journey, whatever age it is. And we're off, and we're being filled in on how to take this journey. And we're told, this is your life. Nobody else is going to live it for you. If you're going to succeed, it's going to be you. So you better pay attention on how to play by the rules and how to understand. So we followed him. And the disappointment in that game plan that all of us were taught generally comes, alcoholics get it sooner, but it generally comes around middle age when we go, owning a home and having two kids and being respected in the community sucks. It didn't make me happy at all. I'm still as lost and as disappointed and confused about what the hell is this? Why am I doing this? And we suddenly are losing faith in the game plan that we were given. Because the game plan was accurate up until one final point. The game plan was, if you study 1 hour every night for every course that you're taking, and you do every bit of homework, and you attend every class, you'll get all A's. And you do that. Now, when you get a job, if you work the full 8 hours and you really throw yourself into it, they're going to notice you and they're going to promote you, and you follow it, and you go right up here. But you had told yourself, without even realizing it, that when I do get there, I'm going to finally be happy. And then when you got there, you weren't happy. So you said, oh, I guess you got to go from general manager to president of the company. Then, and do you remember this? It started in grammar school. This grammar school sucks. I mean, I'm having fun here, but goddamn, but look, when I get to high school, that's when it's all going to come together and I'm going to really enjoy it. And then we get in high school, we're still nervous, people are beating us, we're going, yeah, but see those college guys, when I get there. Now, when I get married, now remember when I got in the Marine Corps, I said, when I get my wings and I'm a fighter pilot, and then I got my wings and I was a fighter pilot, and I said, they don't make fighter pilots like they used to. Because I'm still nothing, really. Because I haven't fixed something inside. The whole illusion is, I was looking for a word that we could use for the whole weekend to describe this entire process, and the word was story. And I love the word. How many meanings does story have? You know what I mean? We got a ghost story, a short story, a love story, an action story, a Western story, a likely story. How about that? A likely story is unlikely, and we call it a likely story. Well, that's a likely story. And so it's just part of everything. It is. And the way I remember it, this is vivid in my mind. A blue light has just pulled us over in another unjust arrest. We've done nothing wrong, and here he comes up to the door, and he said, okay, what's the story here? I mean, what a question to ask an alcoholic. What's a story here? So what do you say inside of yourself when he asked that question? I better come up with something good. I better come up with something good. Well, officer, I know this is hard to believe, But about 20 miles back, I let my dog out to go to the bathroom in the woods there. He jumped back in the car. I got driving along. I looked over. I couldn't believe it. He had a hand grenade in his mouth. And the pin was out. If he opened his mouth, I thought it would blow the car. I was going as fast as I could to the National Guard Armory to have him look at the, take care of this situation. And at the last minute, right before you pulled me over, he threw it out the window and it didn't go off. And the cop says, "You better have a better story than that." Remember that feeling? So we're communicating in stories that are designed to work to our advantage, to work to our advantage. And this is done in relationships, it's done at work, it's done everywhere. We tailor things in the form of a story so that it helps us. And it all began because we're separated. Because in our mind, it's just us against the world. And that's, you know, there's little me against the whole freaking world. And so I better keep coming up with good stories. I better keep coming up with good stories. One of the great storybooks that you and I know of, one of the greatest storybooks ever written. It was written in 1939. First edition, first printing of the big book. If you go to the title page, do y'all remember what that says? It says, "Alcoholics Anonymous, the story of how 100 men recovered from alcoholism." And then we opened up the index. Well, what's in here? Whoa, chapter one, Bill's story. And then we go to the entire second half of the book. 29 stories of recovery. So it's, there it is. It's almost like all reality comes in the form of a story. I might even submit to you that every character defect is a story. I'm sitting here. I look over at this guy and I go, he doesn't like me. Now I feel rejection. I feel afraid. I triggered my character defects by a story. And if you look behind anger, you look behind envy, envy just doesn't come up unless you tell a story about envy to yourself. Wouldn't you agree that? It's not fair he has a yacht and I don't. Just the guy having a yacht and you not having it doesn't create envy in everybody. But when you want to feel envy, we make up a story that he shouldn't have it unless I have it. And we can do that. You can just take every character defect and see it's really because we created a story around it. And so it comes up with, I forget how this ends. Oh, so we get back to what we're trying to, Clancy talks about, that it's not just alcoholism, but life is a disease of perception. So what you see is real to you, and you decide, you react to it. Events in life have no emotional, they won't cause emotional reactions unless you put an adjective to it. The storytelling for us human beings is, I put an adjective to it. In other words, it's a rainy day. There's no emotion attached to that. But I wanted to play golf today. And so I go, this is a rainy day that sucks. This rainy day is awful. this rainy day is unfair. The day is sitting there going, what the hell are you talking about? What the hell am I being on for? What are you picking on me for? The cloud came and we made some water. It come down. Now you're going, this day shouldn't have happened to me. I've been waiting for 2 months to get a day off the plate, and then it rains on me. None of that was created by the universe. It just made some rain one day, and you decided to turn it into a major event. So unfair that it justified a two-week drunk. That's a powerful adjective to put on the simplicity of a day with rain. And the same thing happens with people at work, with our family, with politics, with the IRS, with the police department, everything. The event has to have an adjective. This is more like it. Now we're approving of what just took place. But most of the time, we are saying that the natural unfolding of the universe was wrong and shouldn't have unfolded that way. That's monstrous self-centeredness and ego to make a statement like that. It just shouldn't have turned out that there was whatever it was. And you even can see it in tsunamis and volcanoes going, that just shouldn't have done that to all those people. It shouldn't have happened. Why would God let that happen? You see, everything just happens. It's all in order. It is just, and I think our first glimpse of that comes as we start turning the corner in AA and we start having our first glimpses of the other side, of sobriety, of spirituality. And we come to the realization that the only way this could have happened, where we would have opened our ego minds up to to asking for help or to seeking a higher power, was by complete defeat. And we go, well, now that I look at my alcoholism, I see it in a different light. And I see that unless I had all that trouble, I wouldn't be where I am today. I would not be on this spiritual quest. I wouldn't have any peace of mind. And then you hear people in AA saying, I'm so glad that I'm an alcoholic. First time I heard that, I thought the guy didn't speak it right. I thought he meant to say, I'm so glad I'm sober from alcoholism. But when I think about it, I go, boy, am I glad I'm an alcoholic. I never would have tried all this spiritual stuff. I would have just dismissed it. If I could have gotten along without help, I'd still be out there. I like being in charge. I like taking credit for everything. Yeah, I did it. I'm a self-made man. But I couldn't make it. I failed. I had to take my handkerchief out of my pocket and hold it up and just surrender unconditionally. Unconditionally. How embarrassing is that? How low can you get? Then I found out there's something lower than unconditional surrender. AA. I mean, how far down can you go? I've already been in jail. I've been in a nut war. That was bad enough. But now, I'm in freaking AA. Boy, what if my friends find out? You remember that? It was like, jeez. And you remember your first meeting, you look around, you go, why would I listen to these people? They're not in my league. They're not from the right side. They're not this. And if you're from the other side of the track, why would I listen to these jerks that went to college? They don't know anything about street smarts. Why should I look? boy, we never could have dreamed that the universe was handing us the greatest present a human being can get. In those dumpy little meetings, 1964. Couldn't have seen that. So if you asked me about him back then, I was telling you about him. This is awful. This is the worst thing that ever happened to me. You remember saying that? This is terrible. I'm going to these freaking meetings. They're all talking about, oh, I'm so happy. Screw you, you're happy. I'm not happy. What the hell is this? How did I know I was wrong? How could I have known that all those words I was saying were wrong? Because I couldn't see what was really happening. Why couldn't I see it? Because my perception was totally blinded by my self-centeredness and my storytelling to myself. And we see it throughout the big book. One of two words. Delusion or illusion. You remember those? The illusion or delusion that we could drink like other people has to be smashed. Then it goes on to say, old ideas have failed us nothing. What are old ideas? Old stories. Right? That's what old ideas are. I had a million of them. All the different people you shouldn't trust. All the different prejudices. All of the ideas that I heard from somebody else, all of those were concentrated inside of me, and it made me see a world that was painful. When I looked around, it was painful to be here. God, it's physical pain, sexual pain, pride pain. It's just, God. Well, how did I get born into this? Once in a while, oh, look at the nice moon. But I didn't spend much time doing that. I was more comfortable with nice moon, but everything else sucks. Because there was no way to escape the perception that I had. And there's no way to learn your way out of it. We have to be led. We have to have a guide. If we're going to take the spiritual journey, we have to have a guide. And the guide, it isn't that we walk along this way. The guide is working on helping us see everything differently. And as we see it differently, our story changes. It's that simple. Our story changes. The great analogy that has been used, I hear it in AA a lot, is going back, I forget how many hundred years ago, maybe 1,000, no, not, it was hundreds, when they thought the Earth was the center of the solar system. That was the common knowledge, and everybody, they had drawings and the whole thing. And kings and monarchs and pharaohs and whatever was around there certainly believed it because that's where they lived. What else would be the center? When you're self-centered, this of course Earth is the center. But as they started looking at the relative motion and the planets, etc., it wasn't adding up. It was the wrong perspective. And when they advanced the idea that all these other ideas we've had for all these years are wrong, they wanted to execute the people who broke through on this, the astronomers. Because I don't like having to change all my ideas. I don't like the idea that everything is wrong. But what happened when they finally conceded that the sun was indeed the center of the universe? All the formulas fit. everything was in harmony. You could explain things. It just made all the difference in the world. And so we come against our own situation, which is, I'm the center of the universe. I'm certainly the center of this world. How did I get that way? Well, I was 6 years old. I walk out in the backyard and I start looking around. I looked over there to the south and there was a farm and everything. And I looked over here and there was the road that went off to school. And I looked over here and there was the hills that are starting up there. And I looked back here and there was the forest. And no matter where I looked, I was in the center of everything I looked at. And so were you. If you just spun around and took a 360-degree look at the world you lived in, you were right in the middle of it. You were the center. And being the center, when you're not the center, causes a lot of problems. It causes perceptions to be wrong. It causes a great deal of conflict with other human beings because for some unknown reason, they mistakenly think that they're the center. Isn't that funny? I've already concluded I am. Now I'm talking to a guy who thinks he is. Now there's a self-centered guy. I mean, I can't believe he thinks he's the center when I already am the center. And so we have a lot of conflict. Wait a minute, I'm at the center first. And we can't find a way to live in harmony. And as long as we stay self-centered, it'll be impossible. It'll be impossible because it looks like there's only so much to go around and he's getting more than I am. And that's going to be bad for me. That's what it looks like. It looks like. So financial insecurity comes from being self-centered. Do you see what I'm saying? From where I look, I need more money. And we feel it. And we suffer from it. And we can't sleep at night worrying about it. The first time my sponsor told me that financial insecurity could be removed spiritually without any money showing up, I sat back, like all newcomers, I was B-R-O-K-E, broke with six kids. And I looked at him and I said, well, technically. Technically. Maybe I could conceive that my financial insecurity could be lifted away by God. I just would rather have the money. I would rather have the money. I would like financial insecurity to be removed by the arrival of money. It just, I got my hands on it, I can see it, it makes more sense, etc. Now, have you ever talked to people who made a lot of money and gone over and said, God, it must be nice to have all financial insecurity gone? And they go, oh no, I still got it. This could disappear. I'm just as nervous as I used to be. I mean, you know, look what happened. The real estate. Oh, God, now it's all gone. Well, it could go. So all of a sudden, if we really get honest, we're finding that increasing the supply doesn't do the job because we can increase the demand at twice the speed. I was talking to Steve about that TV show, American Greed, about where these people have put together these deals that are not, they're lying to their friends and they're taking their money and they're investing it and all that and they're building up Ponzi things. And they get millions and millions. And all of a sudden they'll have seven yachts. You know, one here, one Bermuda, one over here, one over there. And they're looking at another one. And they go, why? I don't have enough yachts. I don't have enough homes. I don't have enough. There's so much evidence out there that financial insecurity cannot be taken away by the introduction of money. And yet, everyone in this room is going, well, I'd like to try it. I'd like to just see personally what really happens when you win the lottery. I would like to see that. I mean, I remember thinking like that, boy, what would I do? Oh, boy, I put it up money and all that. And then I got tired of it, but I do know. And I think probably all of us have seen stories about former lottery winners. It's not a happy lot, is it? Families show up, where's mine? And it just becomes too much. So the solution, which was there all along, is God. So much so that they put a warning label on money. In God we trust. Don't trust this freaking money. I'm telling you myself. I can't do it. I can't fix you. Here, read. And part of us wants to go along with that, and part of us wants to stay over here, where we're familiar with the storyline. We're familiar with self-centeredness. There are people who get familiar with the gutter, and you fix them up a little bit, and next thing they're bad. I know it's miserable, but I'm used to it. It's my kind of misery. And they've been in jail a long time. They get out, and I can't stand it out here. I'll go punch a cop. We get comfortable with the old ideas. So what does AA say? Old ideas availed us nothing. We're going to go right through with a good sponsor. We're going to look at every one of your old ideas, which is looking at every one of our old stories. Because that's what an idea is. It is a perspective on something. And we'll see how many remain unchanged. It's amazing how 10 years of sobriety, 20 years of sobriety, 30 years of sobriety, you're still finding a better way of seeing things, a better perspective on truth. Because I believe that truth is a ever-increasing experience. And when I am talking to new people about this, I tell them that it isn't that they're wrong. When I'm going to tell them, you know, they say, well, this is what I think, and then I'll go, yes. But I'm going to tell you something that's true. But I'm going to tell you something that's more true. So you can take your truth and add this on top of it, and you'll have something that's more true. This is what spiritual growth is about. When you have your first breakthrough, your first glimpse of God, of your place or whatever, it's as true as can be. It is, bam. But as you move on, you go, well, this is even more revealing. And then we have the experience of our big book. More will be revealed as we grow spiritually. They go hand in hand. And I think Bill, I don't know, three or four times, he said, well, the answer is more spiritual growth. Remember that? Still more spiritual growth. Still more spiritual growth. And we go, right. And then the ego goes, But we ought to get money too. We ought to get this. We ought to, and we're making a combination deal. We're going to get some God, and we're going to get some sex, or we're going to get some God, we're going to get some rock and roll. We're going to get some of this, we're going to get some of that. And the combination will be unbeatable. It's very difficult to put all your eggs in one basket and decide to become as dependent on God as you can, and to become as unself-sufficient as you can. Because the more unself-sufficient you are, the more vulnerable you are. God has to really do it, man. And that is quite a leap of faith. And of course, it starts with the removal of our alcohol problem. And we are given a complete view. Okay, you want proof that if you rely on God, it turns out wonderful? Well, let's turn your alcohol problem over. And you turn it over, and all of a sudden you go, oh my God, I forgot to think about drinking last month. Really? How'd you do that? I don't know. It just happened. It just happened. Holy cow. Can you explain why? Nope. It just happened. And then you go a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 45. I've gone 46 years, probably 46 and a half, never thinking about drinking. How could an alcoholic go that long without thinking about drinking? Do you ever try to not think about drinking on your own? Okay, no thinking about drinking today. That's it. No thinking, I'm going to think about it. Hey, Budweiser. Oh, sorry. I'll start over again. You could probably go maybe 3 minutes. When alcohol is the most important thing, you're like, okay, I'm not going to think about it. And so there is a reality here that isn't real. That's what we're starting to realize with all these stories. And let's see. These are more fine points. Stories generally lead us to understand something better. Do you follow what I'm saying? They help us understand something better. But in the spiritual world, understanding isn't part of the ball game. You didn't have to understand why three drinks taught you how to dance. You just drank them, and it happened. Do you remember that? High school dance, you're afraid to ask somebody to dance, and you've never had any alcohol, and somebody says, take a couple swigs of this, you'll be out there. And you're going, are you trying to tell me that there are some dancing lessons in this small glass, and that if I consume it, I will know how to dance? Yep, yep. Well, I'm not going to do it until I understand it. You'd still be waiting, and you would still be not believing that there was dancing lessons in that glass of vodka. But what happened after you drank it and you're out there? You went, wow. So you're experiencing something that you don't understand. And to me, that's what the spiritual world is. We experience it and don't have to understand it. I don't have to understand how my obsession with alcohol was lifted. As a matter of fact, I don't think I could explain it. I mean, my best explanation would be, well, I did these stupid steps and I don't know, it just happened. That's not a very good explanation, is it? But that's how we would have to explain it. In other words, spirituality doesn't lend itself to being explained very well. Did you try and explain AA to your friends after you got here? And they said, God, you look great, John. What's going on? You working out? Are you? No. Well, I go to AA. Really? Well, what do you do? Oh, God, it's great. It's great. You ought to come with me sometime. Well, what do you do? Well, there's like 15 of us. And we get in a room and we choose one person to be the leader. And then they come up with a topic, you know, like resentment or humility or something like that. Then we all go around the room and comment on it. It is, you, are you sure you don't want to come? It just transformed my whole, holy cow, he used to be a drunk, now he's crazy. You can't, but what happens if your friend does come, maybe to your anniversary, and they see an AA meeting? Now they're telling their friends, you ought to see this thing. Well, what do they do? Well, then he looks crazy trying to explain miracles through logic. And so we have kind of an interesting situation here. We were 100% self-centered. We got to the end of our separation from God, and the further away we got, the more unbearable it was. We didn't know that that's why it was so unbearable. We thought it was physical sickness. We thought it was this. But the soul was the part that was hurting the most. And we start learning a little bit more about ourselves. Cars run on gasoline. Jets run on JP4 or JP5. Steam engines run on wood or coal. And diesels and electric engines, they all have the correct fuel to make them function. And if you mixed it, you started putting gasoline in a jet and JP6 in a prop plane, or started switching diesel fuel into some other place, things don't function too well because they're on the wrong fuel. Human beings were meant to operate on spiritual fuel. That's how they were designed. And we were trying to make it run smoothly on money and power and prestige and whatever. Now, we kept going, but it wasn't, we could tell, this is not working, this, something's wrong. Do you remember that sense that something was wrong? It was there all the time. Yeah, it's great, but there's still something wrong. Yeah, it's wonderful, but there's still something missing. And we were told the answer. It's almost like we get to play the game. Let's figure life out. That's the game, right? Who am I? What am I doing? Blah, blah, blah. And when we're six, we go, don't forget, the answer is God. Okay, got it. And then we run out here and they go, what's the answer? Money. In other words, here's the test we're going to have to pass. And they give us the answer to start with. And we just throw that away. Because, God could do, but I think I can do better than God does. That's what I thought when I was flying those jets around. This is the king of the universe. You don't get any faster. I'm the hottest thing. I'm the greatest. So we kept going. And all of a sudden, we ran out of fuel. There was no spirituality left. The connection was down to just about disconnected. And that's what our bottoms were. And as William James said, every spiritual awakening that he studied in his book, Varieties of Religious Experience, occurred when the human being got desperate and was willing, as Howard told me, to accept his desperation. And that made him desperate enough to accept help. So the journey finally played out. Sometimes we die because we just run out of spiritual fuel, and there's the alcoholics dying all over the place. And if you went up to them and said, would you like some spiritual fuel? They would go, no, no, that's not my problem. That's not what's wrong at all. No. It's a long story. It involves my father and three of my wives, and they ganged up, and it's very complicated. But no, I don't need spiritual fuel. I don't need that. That's his story, and he stuck with it. He stuck with the story, I don't need spiritual fuel. And he's dead wrong. But it's his story, and he's sticking to it. And that's what we all did, right? It's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Why wouldn't I want to change the story? I wrote the freaking story. I'm the author. Why should I have to change it? It's my story. Do you see the self-centeredness? This is just who I am. No, it isn't. You're wrong again. That isn't who you are. That's your story about who you are. Now, whether you like it or not, we're going to put some spiritual fuel in you. Because we're going to get you a mean sponsor. You're going to do things that you never thought you would do. And whenever I think of doing things that you never thought you'd do, I just think of Clancy in his little routine when his sponsor made him make amends. You've all heard that, where the sponsor comes to the meeting and says to Clancy, I heard you insulted that lady over there. What did you do? And he said, I called her a bitch. Well, you shouldn't do that. Well, she is a bitch. Well, I want you to go over and make amends. Nah. And he doesn't want to do it. You can just see him. And finally, he just goes over there, going against every value inside of himself. I'm sorry. Then he comes walking back, bitch. But he went over and did something totally against his better judgment, totally against everything inside of him. When I'm sponsoring people and they are about to do that, they make my favorite noise. I just love to hear this noise. Okay. That's the noise of someone changing their mind. It sounds like brakes squealing and cogs rupturing each other, and it's a terrible noise. All right. Now you know they have hit the magic thing in spirituality. I'm willing to reconsider. I'm willing to admit my story maybe have a few little glitches in it. That's about as far as we go in the beginning. Yeah, my old ideas, my story. Maybe there are a few little things that could use some touching up. And the sponsor, no, we don't touch up. We totally destroy it, and then we put it back together again. And we start in on every stinking idea. Isn't that amazing? What's your story on this? Well, I think that... Get rid of that one. What do you say about get rid of that one? Now, do we get informed what the new story is? Somebody show it to us and say, okay, your story's all good. Here's this story here. Nope. Nobody tells us. Doesn't happen that way at all. Bit by bit, it gets revealed. That's what really happens. We go over, and it's almost as if we bought a painting of some amusement park, and somebody notices, wait a minute, there's another painting under this one. And they get a very careful people who know how to restore, and they slowly take away the amusement park, and there's a freaking masterpiece underneath that could not have been seen until we removed the phony one on top. So this removal process of our story is wonderful. And I think we find, as it, the painful, I'm wrong on that. And it's painful to have your ego crushed. But then you look up and you see positive results from the pain of ego crushing. And as Bill writes in the 12 and 12, we begin to fear pain less and embrace humility more. That's a great transition. But it all consisted in destroying old stories, pulling your hands away from it so you can let it go. All right, I'll let that resentment go. I won't kill my uncle. I'll try to understand him. But he is mean. He's the worst person I ever met. Ever since I was a little kid, just awful. The worst man I ever, God, I hate him. 5 years later, you and your uncle are playing golf. How did that happen? Well, I was willing to let go of a lot of stories I had in my head about him to see what was there. And it's just beautiful what gets revealed. So we've covered half of the, today is going to be on conscious separation, and tomorrow and Sunday will be on conscious contact. So we've covered half of stories, and we'll go to dinner, and then when we come back here, we'll cover the second half of dealing with our stories. That's the end of the time. We'll take wrap it up. Thank you all. Okay, John.